Chodesh Tov is right. It is, it is. Oh, it's not on song. Help. I heard a noise. Uh-oh. Okay, I thought I muted everybody, but maybe I didn't. It's going to be trouble. Okay, if I didn't mute everybody, if everybody can mute themselves, just in case, please. No, you guys can all talk as much as you want. Only the people on the computer have to be muted. Okay, well, good morning, everybody. Here we are, back again. Amazing. It's actually, Pesach has come, Pesach has... Yeah? And now we're back. All right, so in the front of this, so we were doing a few, as we were, we'll continue, we're doing Parshas Kedoshim, and we last term, oh, it's going to bother me, I have to figure this out. Okay, let's see, sorry, I've got to figure out how to mute, sorry, make sure, because I don't know why it didn't do it. No, we don't want everybody to be able to mute themselves. It's still not doing it, though. Okay. I'm not sure why. It's not muted, and I don't know why. And I'm pressing it, and it's still not doing it.
Oh, yeah. We'll mute ourselves.
Yeah, but not everybody is. No. I'm pressing it, and it's still... Let's see. Okay, maybe now. Maybe now. No, it's not doing it. All right, I don't know why. It's gonna be trying. No, it's gonna disturb us. Maybe I should ask Yaakov. Yaakov, I'm really sorry. I don't know why it's not muted. Sorry. Wait, poor Jenny. Sorry, Jenny. Are you ready? I don't know why it's not doing it. I'm really sorry, Yaakov. It's not doing what I'm saying. Okay, so I don't want anybody... Mute all, right? Now maybe. Oh, now everybody's muted?
Everybody's muted, yeah.
Poor Jenny, I think she's muted herself. Okay, it doesn't matter.
No, she's muted.
Yeah, okay. But I think she's on... Yeah, okay. Thank you. Now I think it's fine. Jenny, can you hear now? I hope so. No, wait. Maybe go back on, Jenny, off and on. She can't hear me. Oh, well. Okay, anyways, now we'll just share the screen and we will start. Okay. Very good. Okay, good. That's it. We'll look at that. All right, so we will start. So last time we were doing a few of the mitzvahs, and as we saw, it was very interesting because in Kedoshim, every pasuk can not only have one mitzvah, some pasukim have even two mitzvahs, and it's like bomb, like boom, 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 boom. Sometimes, I shouldn't say sometimes, there's always a reason for the order. But sometimes we are very aware of the reason, and sometimes we're not so aware. But we'll see the flow of the mitzvahs. And I just want to say that what we are leading up to, and this is one of the most famous mitzvahs in the Torah, what we are really leading up to now is we are leading up to the mitzvah of v'yahavta l'reacha kamaycha, the mitzvah of loving your fellow Jew as you love yourself, all right, and that's considered the main mitzvah of the Torah. That will come soon. These mitzvahs that we are doing now are almost, according to some of the mefarshim, they're like prerequisites. They're the building blocks. They get you there. Without these, you can't get to that goal. And that's what we're doing. So a lot of the mitzvahs that we have now are actually stated in the negative sense. Don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that. All to prevent division and disharmony. And hopefully when you have that, then you can attain the positive side, which is the actual love. So also what's fascinating, some of the mefarshim explain that in a sense, it's easier to tell us not to do something rather than to command us to love. That's actually quite a challenging thing, as we know. So these are, in a sense, almost, as we say, like the building blocks, and that's what we're getting to. So we did, last time, just before we broke up, we spoke about leket and peya, right, leaving the parts of the field, tzedakah. We mentioned about paying a worker on time. That's what we did at the end of last term, making sure that you pay the day worker that day, and we went through a whole concept of how that applies to Hashem as well. There was one, I just want to repeat, I feel bad, a little drop of repetition. There was one mitzvah that I just want to go into a drop before we go to a new mitzvah today.
Okay, so we did read these psukim, but just too quickly because it's been a long time. So on page, okay, so on page one it says light tignavu, right? So you shouldn't steal, light sechachashu, you shouldn't deny, light sechakru, you shouldn't lie, ish ba'mita, each man to his friend. That was on page one. Then if you go to page two of the booklet, you see it says light sechavu b'shmi l'sheker, that you shouldn't swear falsely. V'chilalta es Hashem elekecha ani Hashem. And you will desecrate the name of Hashem if you do that. There was one thing I didn't mention last time that I found very beautiful. It says that you shouldn't steal and you shouldn't lie. And a very interesting thing that some of the Mefarshim say is that sometimes you can even be motivated by something positive to steal, and yet you are not permitted. What can be positive that can motivate you to steal? So there's a very interesting thing. I don't know if you remember when we did Parshas Mishpatim, we learned that if somebody steals somebody's sheep or somebody's ox, you have to pay four times back or five times, right? Remember, that was a very interesting halacha. Let's say you know somebody who's very poor. They happen to, yes, own a sheep, but besides for that, they're extremely poor. They have a lot of debts, but they also have a tremendous amount of pride. They don't want to accept any gift or any loan. So what you might think in your mind is you might think, maybe I will steal their sheep, and then I'll have to pay back four, and this way they'll get what I want to give them, and you know, and their pride is intact. The Torah says, no. That's just not the way to do it. So even that, it's very interesting the Mefarshim say, even that kind of practice, because that's just not honesty. Because we'll see underlying a lot of our mitzvahs, it's very interesting, there's sort of two components. The one component is the effect that you're having on the other. The other component is the effect that it has on you who is doing the thing that's wrong. And that's a very important part of the mitzvah as well. So that's what we'll see. So therefore, even if you have good intention, you're engaging in that kind of behavior, it's not a positive thing. And that's something negative for you, and don't try it. Okay, so it's just, it was a cute thing that I had not mentioned last time. All right, let's go now. So now, when it comes to this thing about not swearing falsely, I just want you to, in your booklet, we're going to come back to the psukim, but I just want you to go to, and I'll scroll down in a minute there, but go to page number five for a minute, just for a minute. I just want to see one beautiful thing from the Sefer HaChinuch, who explains this idea of swearing falsely. Now, I know we went a little bit last time, but we didn't do this one, and this is a very important concept. So it's page five in your booklet. There's numbers on the page.
Before you're going ahead, sure. Sorry, I just want to ask you something. I remember myself, it was a child who wanted to get to the bank to steal some money, just because his mother was very, very sick and he hasn't got the money.
Right.
So he wanted to save his mother. So in these cases, what...
Ooh, well, that's a problem. Okay, so obviously what we would hope is that there would be some kind of system in place where he has somebody he can turn to that he can ask for help, because the truth is the stealing is not the right thing. So that's the community's responsibility to have that and that people should be aware of that. So the people shouldn't have to resort to stealing. But yeah, it's a hard one. Obviously, we wouldn't judge that child the same way as we would some, but yeah. All these things are quite complicated. Okay, yes, so let's see now. I just want to show you one thing on page number five, just to see something very beautiful about this idea about not swearing. Now, we've had this mitzvah in the Ten Commandments. As we've said, many of the mitzvahs that we are mentioning now are in the Aseres HaDibros. But obviously here we're learning new halachas, and that's why it's repeated and it's more in detail. And here's where Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching it properly to the Jewish people in a sort of very extensive way. Here, what is the source and what's the root of this mitzvah? So simply, we don't swear falsely because that's the wrong thing to do. It's like lying, right? And it's also a profanity. But the Sefer HaChinuch tells us something a little bit more layered about this mitzvah specifically. And I want to show you, I think this one will just do the English, but we have a translation. The other ones will do also in the Hebrew, just so we get. So he says, at the root. Remember, the Sefer HaChinuch gives us the root, the shayrish of the mitzvah. So if you see in the middle of page five, that middle paragraph, it says, at the root of this precept. So it says, lies the aim that human beings should know and affirm in their minds and strengthen the faith in their hearts that there is no existence like that of Hashem. sounds, what's the connection between knowing that only Hashem is the true existence, that nothing is like Hashem, and not swearing falsely? So let's see, what's the connection? So he says, Hashem who is in heaven above, living and enduring forever, so it is fitting and required of us, when we mention his great name, in connection with our actions and our words, that we should mention him in awe and fear, quivering and trembling, not like mockers who speak of light trivial matters, things which exist fleetingly and then are lost to oblivion, not enduring in their original state, such as us human beings and other entities in this lowly world, because we are talking about swearing using Hashem's name. And if somebody gets used to using Hashem's name in their talking, just like they use other people's names, which in the world you do sometimes find that it's all a matter of habit. It's very, unfortunately, so easy to get into the habit of using, and we'll see language will come up quite a bit over here in a minute, we'll see soon more, but of using like Hashem's name just by, you know, whatever people say. And it's so wrong. Why? Because as he says, it's not only disrespectful to Hashem, but for the person, what they are doing is they're almost equalizing Hashem to all of the other creations in the world, to themselves and all the other creations, which, as we know, are fleeting, are temporary, are not enduring, are not forever. And obviously, Hashem is the creator. So for us to keep that awe, we have to train ourselves whenever we use Hashem's name to literally tremble. And that's why we know it's a very interesting thing that with swearing in Hashem's name, which is a very big part of Torah, sometimes if a person is taken to court and they have to swear because they're accused of something, perhaps, there are very great people who refuse to swear. They would rather pay a fine or be considered guilty rather than use Hashem's name, even in a shvua, because to them that is like, they couldn't do it. They just couldn't get it out that way. That comes from that incredible awe and fear, if you want to say, of Hashem. So we don't have that feeling, but we have to train ourselves to make sure at least not to become, if you want to say, dismissive. And that's why this is such an important mitzvah. That's what the Sefer HaChinuch explains. So it's part of our whole attitude and our whole formation of our whole, if you want to say, our whole internalization of Hashem as being the all-powerful over the world, and that we have to constantly remember. When we stop ourselves from saying something, that also is when we remember. So it's also an interesting thing. When we want to jump and say something and we don't, that's like, oh, you know, so it gives you that pause for a moment. So that's also a very, very important part. Okay, so that's why he says that we should not mention his holy name in vain purposelessly, and he sets the punishment. Okay, so that was that mitzvah. So we're going to go back to the Chumash pages, because I just want to read the next few psukim. Like I said, I know we've read, but I just want to show you one or two more things, then we're going to go inside in depth. We can actually, I think, even skip. I'm just going to check. We might even just skip to the pasuk that I want to discuss today. Just want to see one thing. The page that we are going to go to today is page 3, Loi Sekalev. That's Pasuk Yudalid. So it's Perek Yotes, Pasuk Yudalid. And let's see what it is. So I just wanted to see one beautiful thing here. I don't need to mention any other thing. We mentioned also, that's right, we also mentioned the fact that it said Loi Techalel, right, that you shouldn't desecrate Hashem's name. So I just wanted to point out one more thing. It comes in here amongst all these mitzvahs when it talks about not swearing falsely and not being honest and saying the truth and gnevas das, which we'll talk more about today, which is really deceit, and how important it is for us as Jews especially to act in this above board manner, even more than what's perhaps, it's not just the letter of the law, so to speak, with honesty. It's even if somebody might read into something and they say, oh, she was being deceitful, that can cause a terrible chilul Hashem. Because I'll just read you the words of Rabbi Shamshon Fel Hirsch. He puts it beautifully. He says, Hashem has chosen you from among the nations to be the representative of his name. You must therefore set the example of a nation founded by God on justice, truth, and loyalty. If you tarnish yourselves through dishonesty and lies, you are profaning the name that you bear, and you are undermining the love of Hashem, for whom you must be the messenger. So again, it's quite a heavy, and almost like a heavy weight, but Wherever we are, whoever we encounter, and whatever we're doing, even if it's just in Kohl's or in the bank or whatever it is, we are representatives of God. So we have this incredible responsibility in the way we deal, in the way we talk, in the way we behave constantly. And that's what we are being reminded of here in the Pesukim, because these are day-to-day things, you know, like the way we talk and the way we... And that's why it's so important for us to be constantly aware. Okay, so today's mitzvah that we're going to concentrate, and I know we read the pasuk, but we didn't go into this, definitely not in depth. This on page 3 of your booklet, so let's see the pasuk first, and then we'll see what we're going to do about it. Okay, so on page 3 it starts, Loi sikalel, you shall not curse... Chereish, a deaf person, and let's see, in page 4 continues, V'lifnei iver loisitein michshol, and you shall not place a stumbling block in front of the blind. And it can, the last few words of this pasuk, and this is the end of this topic, V'yareisa, and you shall be have fear, me'aleikecha, of your God, ani Hashem, I am Hashem. These are two very interesting mitzvahs, not to curse somebody who is deaf, not to put a stumbling block before somebody who is blind. And for some reason, we are highlighting fear of Hashem with these two mitzvahs. That will also help us understand what these mitzvahs are. Okay, so let's understand. This is quite interesting, the way the pasuk is very specific about not cursing somebody who is deaf. What does that have to do with anything? We're not meant to curse, I think, ever. What does cursing somebody who's deaf teach us? So if you look into the Rashi, so that's on... Just want to see, yes, it starts on page 3, the Rashi, and then it continues to page 4. So it says, you shall not curse a deaf person. What Rashi tells us, Ein li ela cheresh. On the basis of this verse, what you might think is that I'm only not allowed to curse a deaf person. In other words, I can curse somebody else if he's not deaf. How do we know that you're not allowed to curse anybody? Minayin l'rabbeis kol adam. From where do I know that it should include cursing any person? So here the Gemara teaches us that there's a pasuk, Talmud Leimar, to provide this source. The pasuk tells us somewhere else, ba'amcha loisar, you shall not curse a leader in amongst your nation. That's in Parshas Mishpatim when it talks about judges and leaders. And over there it says you shall not curse them. So you might think over there it just means somebody who's a leader. So from here, from both of these different psukim together, we understand it doesn't matter about the status of the person. That's not what matters. Any person, you are not permitted to curse. And it doesn't matter if he can hear you or if he doesn't hear you. But if that's the case, why does he highlight cheresh here? Why does he highlight deaf? Where does that come in? So let's see what Rashi says first, and then we'll learn a little bit more in depth other reasons. So Rashi says, if that's the case, im kein, so then the question becomes, why lama nemar cheresh? Right on page 4, continues the Rashi. Why does it say a deaf person? To teach us, ma cheresh miyuchat shehu b'chayim, just as a deaf person has the distinct quality of being alive, this is very interesting, af, so too does the prohibition apply to cursing kol shehu b'chayim, only people who are alive. Interesting. Yotza hames, which means that a dead person is not included in this prohibition. As he says, because she'ena b'chayim, he is not alive. Now, this is interesting. That doesn't mean that we should go around cursing dead people, and we'll see soon how that's definitely not the right way to behave. But as far as the biblical mitzvah is that you are not allowed to curse anybody who is alive, whether they can hear you, whether they can't hear you, whether they're a leader or a simple person, you are not permitted to curse them. There is one exception to this rule as far as not cursing somebody who's not alive. We are not permitted to curse our parents, whether they are alive or they have passed away. That is actually a biblical commandment. It's interesting. That's midiraisa, that even if a parent passes away, I mean, you should never curse a parent, but if somebody does and the parent has passed away, they have transgressed a biblical commandment. So that is an exception. However, when it comes to the regular, it's, yeah, it's. So let's see. Let's see what, we'll see a little bit more in Rashi, And then we're going to come to understanding this much more in depth. What is this mitzvah and why we're highlighting a deaf person? Okay, so let's just see what Rashi explains as far as not putting a stumbling block in front of a blind person. So this is also on page number 4, right? This is page number 4. In the middle it says, V'lifnei iver leisiten michshol. Rashi tells us, you shouldn't place a stumbling block in front of a blind person. Lifnei hasuma bedavar, in front of one who is blind about a particular matter. Okay, so it doesn't mean literally a stumbling block physically. We're talking, obviously, about giving somebody bad advice. That's what it means. You can see, so somebody who doesn't know about something, unaware of what the best way to go about it, and you are aware, and you give them wrong advice, you're transgressing this mitzvah, this aveira, so to speak. You're going against what the Torah tells us. And here Rashi gives us a very specific example. He says, don't give any advice that's not appropriate. For example, don't say to him, sell your field and buy a donkey. Like now you would say, sell your house, buy a car. No, don't tell him that. If your intention is, you thereby twist him into your advantage, and take the field from him. So you want to buy the house, so you give him advice, sell the house and buy something else, and then you are able to buy the house. So you see an interesting thing here Rashi's implying. First of all, you're giving him bad advice because obviously it's not good for his financial future. But something underlying Rashi's telling us also is that it is something that's what's motivating you to give him that bad advice. There's something that you want to gain from it. So you see there's two parts, which is actually quite harsh in a certain way. So I guess there is a lot of questions. Let's say you give somebody bad advice knowingly, but you're not going to gain from it. Is that permissible? Obviously not. The question is that biblically prohibited? And that's an interesting thing also. And there's another thing that the Chachamim talk about here, because there's one thing of giving bad advice. Then there's another thing that they say, and this is actually quite... They give an example. It's not just bad advice, but it's also if you enable somebody to do something wrong. And the example that's given is if, let's say, somebody is a nazir, right? They've taken upon themselves that they are not going to be drinking wine for the next 30 days. And you come in with this beautiful big bottle of wine and you give it to them as a present. Perhaps you are putting a stumbling block before the blind because you are enabling them to go against the mitzvah that they are meant to be doing. There's a big question with that one, though. That one's not so simple because that has a lot of involved. We're not a halacha class, so we're not going to go, but it's just fascinating. If the person is able to get the wine somewhere else, maybe you're not doing anything wrong by giving him a bottle of wine because he can get it anyway. Maybe by you giving him the bottle of wine, you're not even enticing him. Maybe he's just going to put it away for the next month, right? So there's a lot of different questions as far as what is involved in that. What does it really mean to enable somebody to do an aveira? It could be that if you give him something that he has no way of getting from anywhere else, and you provide it for him, and then he transgresses, then you have done something wrong. So it's very involved, but obviously we see here what is, yes, in common between both of these things is that it's not talking about a physical object in front of somebody who is blind and going to fall. That's not what we're talking about. Is that covered by this pasuk? And that's also a question. So we would think, of course it is. That's the simple meaning of the pasuk. But according to some commentaries, of course you can't put something, a stumbling block in front of somebody who's blind, but we don't learn that from this pasuk. That's from a different pasuk, which is actually in a funny way, later in Dvarim, it's like Moshe Rabbeinu's curse, it says all the different curses, and he says, cursed is the one who puts a stumbling block before somebody who's going to trip on it. And that's where we learn it from, they say. How do you know? How do you know? Perhaps. Okay, there are some opinions that this also does mean simply, though there is, of course, this alien. It always has to be different opinions. So according to some opinions, this is where we learn that you physically don't put a stumbling block in front of somebody blind. But what do you think? Look at the pasuk. It's very interesting. Look at the words. What word does it use for putting the stumbling block here? It says, loy sitain michshal. What does sitain mean? To give. Excellent. To give. What word should be used if you want to say, what would be the better word if it's just a physical thing? Excellent. You should say, lo tosim. Do not place a stumbling block. It doesn't say that. It says give. So give makes more sense with advice, with what you're saying, with guiding him, with leading him in a certain way. So that's why a lot of the Mefarshim say it definitely doesn't mean physically a stumbling block. But there's also something else. And this the Gur Aryeh tells us, the Maharal. He explains, and let's see, I think we'll see it from Rashi. So let's see it in Rashi first, and he explains the Rashi. So let's look at the next Rashi, V'yareisa melekecha, right, that you should fear your God. And this is an interesting thing, because we said these two mitzvahs, for some reason we mentioned the fear of God. Every mitzvah that we do, what motivates us to do, because we love and fear God. Why are we highlighting it here? So let's see what Rashi says. So Rashi says, Lefi shahadavar hazeh, since this matter, einai moser lebriyos, is not given over to people, leida, to know, because nobody could determine what your motivation is when you are giving advice to somebody else. Only you know what you're thinking when you are giving advice. Sometimes you could give the wrong advice, but you mean well, then you wouldn't be transgressing, right? This is talking if you intentionally give somebody wrong advice. How does anybody know that? Who knows that? Only Hashem knows, because only Hashem knows your thought processes and your intentions. So here you see, it says, Yarashi says, he says, since people are unable to determine in Daitei Shalzef, the intent of this person who gives the bad advice is L'toiva, is for the good of the person he's advising, Oy L'ra, or for bad. V'yachal, he shamet, and he's able to escape blame. The light man, he could very easily say, L'toiva niskavanti, I really intended good, I meant well. I didn't mean anything bad when I told him to do such and such, and it led him to such disaster. So that's why we see over here, Lefichach Nemar, by that's why it says, the Yareisa Melekecha, and you shall have fear of your God. Hamakir Machshevai Secha, God who knows your thoughts. V'chein kol davar hamosar l'libay shel adam ha'iseyu, any matter which is given over to the heart of the person who does it, in other words, which the intention is only known to the person who is doing it, so that's where we stress what is going to motivate you to, yes, do the right thing and not to do the wrong thing? Only if you have fear of God. Because otherwise, you're just going to be led by whatever is good for you. What will stop you from doing something that you can gain from, but somebody else can get harm from? Only if you fear God. And that's why it stresses, V'yareisa melekecha. And the Gur Aryeh stresses that, he says, that's how we know it's not talking about a physical object. Because with a physical object, either the blind person, even though he can't see you, he might somehow sense who put it there, or a witness can see you putting it there. So it's not something that's only between you and God. It's only ideas, advice, that's something between you and God. And that's why, according to many opinions, and it seems that Rashi is implying that, right? He's saying it has to do with giving somebody wrong advice. So that's quite a fascinating. This is a very big halacha, and it has many halachic ramifications. Obviously, we don't, most people will not intentionally transgress such a thing. But anyways, what we see from here is that we have to be extremely careful not to be subjective when we give advice. And that's a hard thing. That's why, we talk about when we have the lawyers and people, you have to be careful. If you have a vested interest, do not be part of the process. Because as we know, this comes in another halacha that we're going to get to later, the idea of bribery. Because we are subjective, we are just people, we are not God. And it is very hard for us to ascertain what is motivating us, even when we think we are being motivated by something good. So it's actually quite it's a halacha that we have to think about a lot when we are in that position. We have to be very, very careful. Okay, I wanted to show you something. Let's go to page number 7. So let's see the Rambam. This is very interesting. This is page number 7. Oh, I'll scroll down. Is actually from the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvahs. Fascinating. Sefer HaMitzvahs usually is just where the Rambam is counting the mitzvahs. And there, he doesn't usually go in depth about the meaning. But over here, he stops and he chooses to explain the depth of this mitzvah. And this is a very interesting one. And this we're going now back to, not to curse somebody who is deaf. The Rambam gives, it's very interesting how the Rambam puts it. It's very psychological. Okay, let's see what the Rambam, he has a whole thing. So, on page number 7. So the Rambam says, this is mitzvah 317 in the Torah of the negative commandments. Shehiziranu mikalel, that he's warned us not to curse. Eze ish, sheyeh miyisrael, any person, any Jewish person, vu amrei, loisa kalel cheresh, right? You shouldn't curse somebody who is deaf. And he says, what's going on? Why would you even come to doing this? And why are we so warned against it? Okay. Vehavin, mimeni, inyan amrei, cheresh mahu. Okay, so we have to understand, what's this idea of deaf? Why are we highlighting a deaf person? So he says, v'zekia nefesh kishehis noya'a linkaim min hamazik. He goes through a whole fascinating thing, and it goes through stages. That let's just say somebody did something to you. What motivates somebody to curse somebody usually? Because somebody insulted you, hurt you, harmed you, whatever it may be, right? So you were hurt by somebody else. And that moved you emotionally. It put you in a state where you almost can't control yourself and things are going to come out of your mouth. Okay, but he says here, first he says in a very general way, that we can be hurt in many different ways, and that will motivate us to do different things, depending on the degree of how hurt we have been. Okay, so he says, sometimes a person can be moved to revenge somebody who has caused you damage, lefi tzuras ha-hezek ha-kayemes b'dimyon. According, usually you take revenge in, so to speak, in if you want to say, in accordance with how much the person has damaged you. So the person has done a lot of damage, right? Then you'll want to take a lot of revenge, as he'll go through in detail. So he says like this. So, and what happens is, I'll just tell you orally a little bit, just it's very beautiful how he explains it. He says that what happens is sometimes when a person harms you, he harms you, well, in your, as he says, in your imagination, which means it's how you perceive. It's not imagination, but it's the perception of the person who's being harmed. So to one person, it could seem like a trivial matter, but to another person, that same thing could be massive. And sometimes what happens is we are not calmed until we have given in accordance to what we feel fits how harmed we have been. And that's when we feel relieved, so to speak, only after we've done enough damage to the other person in accordance to what they've done to us. And then we go, phew, okay, now we can move on, kind of a thing. It's obviously not a very positive behavior, but this is the emotional way, unfortunately, if left just to the natural way that a person might behave. So the Rambam gives actually a few, he gives interesting because he gives almost examples of levels. He says, so the person will not calm down until he actually pays back to the one who's done him damage according to how much damage he has received. Harishuma b'dimyon, that's in his mind, so to speak, that he perceives. Ukasher shalma like mul. And then when he pays him back, tanua chaisa, then he calms down. Atanua, that movement, that feeling, that emotion. V'nederes aisa tzura min adimyon. And that's when he can block it out of his mind. Up until then, he's living in it, dwelling in it, and it's building up. And then finally he pays him back. Okay, now I'll move on. Doesn't really work like that, we know. But anyways, but the point is that unfortunately, that's how some human beings operate. Okay, so let's see what he says. Upamim tishalmeyu gemul beklala u bechirufin levad tanuach bedaita b'shir ma shehigia lemazik min ahezek ba'oisam hamaamarim v'acheiruf. Sometimes a person is not hurt so much. Okay, somebody did something to you, but it angered you, it upset you, but it's not like it caused you damage for life or your children's, whatever it is. And you look at it like, okay, you're angry. You know you're angry. How do you relieve your anger? Sometimes it's enough just to let something not nice come out of your mouth. And it's interesting how sometimes it's enough to let something not nice come out of your mouth to the person. And sometimes it's even enough when it's in your own home and the person doesn't even know you're saying it, right? They upset you, you went somewhere, you got upset, somebody insulted you, whatever it may be. You come home, you're worked up and you just can't seem to calm down. You let out some steam, whether it be to somebody at home or even to the four walls. And all of a sudden, you feel good, you know? You're like, I let it out. Is that okay? Oh, so here, let's see what the Rambam says. Interesting, because you would think that's not so bad.
If you let it out but not curse,
oh,
you could
okay.
Let it out.
You're right, Riva, you're right. So here, that's a very good point. 100%. So there are ways. But here we're talking about cursing. That's why he says, you understand? So let's see, you're 100% right. It's interesting because there was a time, when you were studying psychology, they had this thing like if a person's angry, the best way is to to box or to work themselves up. And I remember Rabbi Twersky wrote, he didn't think that it was really right because he says the more angry you sort of build yourself up, the more angry you feel. It's not really letting out the anger. It's actually building it up. So you have to be careful how you channel that, you know, in that sense.
I like the Torah way. You wait 3 days, you think about it, and then you go talk to the person and agree to disagree.
Sounds very good when it can work. Yes, Riva. Okay, so let's see. So it has, as the Rambam continues, so he says, so the person can sometimes, that can be enough for them. Okay, then sometimes it's more difficult, like harsher, and he doesn't calm down. As he says, until you make the person lose all their money, and then you calm down. And then he goes on and he says, sometimes it's even worse. Till you literally take revenge against them physically. It's like you hit them and you cause them a limb loss, right? We know, unfortunately, in the world, some people feel that's the only revenge that's actually gonna do something. Sometimes it's so harsh that you don't calm down until the person's dead. You know, and then you say, okay, now I can calm down. Okay, so he says, if it's salkum and amitzius, and the person doesn't exist anymore. Vizewa tachlis, and like that's the ultimate. So he says, and now we come to our thing, to the really where we're getting to. Sometimes it can just be a small emotional thing, and you only want, so to speak, a small punishment, if you want to say. Because it's only a small harm that has been done. As we said, the way you relieve it is just by screaming and to curse him, even if he doesn't hear you, and he's not even there near you. This is known by people who have a little bit of an anger issue and some people who have a temper. That when do they calm down? This is the way they calm down from the small things that people do to them. Even though the person that has harmed him isn't even aware that you're angry. And all the curses that you let out, they don't hear it. So here the Rambam says, we might think, it's possible that a person might think, that what is forbidden to us, the only time it's forbidden is when somebody else actually hears it, either the person or another person. You might think that you're not transgressing anything. If you just stand in your own little room and nobody else is there, you lock the door, close the windows, pull the curtains, and you just let it out by really letting every single curse. You might think, nothing wrong, I'm just letting out my anger. So here the Rambam says, very powerful, he says, Lama shiyasigeyu minatzar v'hakeev, aval klalas cheresh acher shela yishma. Right? It's not going to be any sin because nobody hears it. It is forbidden and we have to be extremely careful. Why? And this is the most important line. Because the Torah is not only worried about the person who's being cursed. What is the Torah worried about? What is the Torah stressing here? It is be'inyan hamikalel, the person who is actually doing the cursing. That's who the Torah is concerned about. as he says, why gamken she his hira shelo yania nafshei el hanekama v'loy yagila lichais. Two things: that you shouldn't allow yourself to go in the way of revenge, and you shouldn't get used to having a temper. You shouldn't feed your anger. You shouldn't allow that. That's not the Torah way. The Rambam talks about this a lot in Hilchas Deis. He has another place where he talks about personality traits. And to the Rambam, anger is one of the worst personality traits. And he, like every personality trait, he says, you know, you go to the middle with anger, you go to the other extreme. A person's really, according to the Rambam, never meant to get angry. Okay, that's a whole question, how you achieve that and what that means. But it's a fascinating thing that here we can see, this doesn't say anger, it just says cursing. And yet the Rambam says this is the reason. The reason for this mitzvah is not to do with the curses that you are uttering, not to do with the harm you're going to do to the other person, but it's the harm you're doing to yourself. And that's why it stresses even a deaf person, because it doesn't matter if it's heard or not. Totally not relevant here. It is you who shouldn't be doing the cursing. That's what the Rambam is very, very much stressing. Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Exactly. To you. So this is a big discussion about the power curse. Now, but just want to, Riva, that's a very good point. We'll get to that in a minute. I think we're going to stop here from the Rambam. We're going to go to a different Mefarish, because I want to show you that there's different angles. So here, you see the Rambam stress here, and he really is stressing it, is that this mitzvah, the reason for it, is really because of the person who's doing the cursing. So there comes a big question. Is it only the person that's doing the cursing, or is there actual harm done to the person who is being cursed? Is that part of this mitzvah? Is that one of the motivations that Hashem says not to curse? Because if you curse, you can cause harm to the one who you are cursing. So now, the Rambam's not saying you don't, but the Rambam isn't mentioning that at all, right? To him, it's about the person doing the cursing. So let's see, I want to show you something. Look at the page number 8. Next page, Rabbeinu Bechai. Let's see how he explains it. So he has a very interesting way of looking at it, and he says, why shouldn't you curse somebody who is deaf? Hizkir akas of cheresh. Why does the pasuk emphasize somebody who is deaf? Kidei lilmeid kal vachomer. First of all, for us to learn, we know what kal vachomer means, how much more so, which means he says like this. Im acheresh ala yishma, the deaf person who doesn't hear, kishahu mekal alaysay, when he is being cursed, his hira all of Torah, and the Torah still warns us against cursing him, ein sarich loymar, mishe yishma v'his katzef v'nis bayesh. For sure, somebody who will hear, and will get upset, and will get embarrassed, v'chol ze, for sure you're not allowed to curse them. Okay, so here he mentions the first thing that, like the Rambam says, that a person has to be very careful with his words. That you shouldn't get used to having such a terrible personality trait. Okay, he gives a very interesting thing. He says it even stronger than the Rambam. It's not because of your friend Hashoimeya. Ella mitzad atzma. He says it clearly. It's only because of you. In other words, you shouldn't be doing the cursing, not the one receiving the curses. Why? Let's see. Why is the Torah emphasizing so much? As we said, even if nobody hears it, why? What's so bad about it? So he says a very interesting thing. Lekach hizir akas of cheresh. That's why the pasuk emphasizes the deaf. For who binyan av lechol ashar, and this obviously is a general category which includes everybody else. Va'oid mipnei shadiber akas of behayve. So the pasuk is talking in behayve means what's relevant, what happens often, and he says shabnei adam mekalulem acheresh. Because people do curse somebody who is deaf, which means, in this context, it could mean somebody who can't answer them back, somebody who is vulnerable. Unfortunately, we know we're not going to go cursing somebody who has power, right? Somebody who has leadership, or somebody who we're afraid of, or somebody who can do us harm back. We will tend to curse somebody who we feel lower than us. That's just, unfortunately, human nature. And that's why it also mentions the Cheresh, because the Cheresh is a very vulnerable person, especially in this context. We can say he's so vulnerable, he's not even aware that he's being cursed. And therefore, we can go and embarrass him and shame him, and he won't even know, and he can't stand up for himself. That's unfortunate human nature. And as the Rabbeinu Bechai says, we better be very careful. Obviously, it applies to everybody, but these are the people who we might tend to. And that's why it also mentions not to put a stumbling block before the blind, as he says, because that's the person who you could put a stumbling block. If somebody is aware, then you won't. That's why it mentions fearing of Hashem. Okay, I want to stop over here because I want to see really the one that explains why it's so important is the Sefer HaChinuch. Go to page number 9.
Are they also talking about in the presence or in their absence?
Okay, so it's both. Both. So that's why he's saying. So it's definitely in the presence you're not allowed to, but even in the absence. That's what he's stressing. Yeah. So for sure in the presence, not even in, and we might think, in our own room, or it's not going to do anybody any harm, or they won't even know, we're not embarrassing them. So even not in their presence, but for sure in their presence. Okay, let's see number 9. Here we'll see something interesting. Why? What's so terrible about this, using these curses, so to speak, or speaking in this way, in this disparaging way? Why is it so important to stress it? And I'm not going to read the whole thing because I know we've done a few, so I should have highlighted a few lines here. But okay, so he says like this. Because he first quotes from Rashi. He says, he gives a very, very interesting thing. I'll just tell you orally this one because I know time is moving and I just want to share some two beautiful ideas that the Sefer HaChinuch says. So first of all, he says something very powerful. He says that this, he takes it, I'll say first what he says second, because the truth is second is what explains this thing of the Rambam. So first he says, why is it that the Rambam thinks this way, and why is it that the Rabbeinu Bechaya thinks this way, that we have to be so careful in ourselves, so to speak, it's the person who's doing the cursing. Because we know what identifies us as people. We know from the beginning of creation, when Hashem created the person, it says, Vayipach ba'apov nishmas chayim, that Hashem blew into our nostrils a breath of life. And Unkelus says, what is a breath of life? I mean, we have many explanations. It's the neshama, right? It's the godly soul. But the word that Unkelus says is nefesh mimalala, which means a soul that speaks. A communicator. We know this. We've heard this so many times. A human being in Torah is called a midaber. That's how we identify us. We are communicators. We are speakers. That's what makes us unique. If that's what makes us unique, if that's the nishmas chayim that Hashem blew into us, how dare we take that holiest, most unique aspect of ourself and defile it by cursing? That is the lowest thing you could do to the most precious gift that Hashem has given us. So that's one way that makes it very understandable. Not only how dare we defile it, but the opposite. How much respect and how we should treat it with the utmost protection that we possibly can. It's interesting because it's really a side thing, but I remember, I think I've shared, but when I was growing up, being an American, so one of our heroes was Helen Keller, right? So she was, both blind and deaf. And I remember when I was growing up, to me, thank God I can see and I can hear, and so I don't know what it means not to see and not to hear. But I always used to think that as long as I can see, I can be independent. But hearing, which is obviously an extremely important thing, you can still walk around, you won't fall, you won't. And yet when she was asked, and obviously she didn't have either, but when she was asked if she was able to choose one of those two senses, which one would she choose to be given? So she said, hearing. Why? She said, the world is a world of communication. And she's so right. It is a world of communication. And psychologically, they've done studies that people who are harder of hearing actually suffer more psychologically than people who don't see. It's very interesting, even though sight is so important. It makes us independent, as we know. But we have to be able to communicate. And why is that? Because that's what we are. We are a nefesh mimalala. That's what identifies us. Now, if that's what we are, how dare we take that tool that Hashem has given us to speak and to use it in such a derogatory way? First of all, you couldn't be more ungrateful to God. You couldn't be showing that's the most ingratitude that you can do. It's like if somebody gives you, I can't even imagine, but if somebody gives you a precious bracelet and you use that to scrub your counter, it's ridiculous. You don't use something so precious for something so low, even if you think you're not doing any harm to anybody. But then the Sefer HaChinuch has his own view. And he says that in his view, the curses themselves also do harm. The reason the Torah tells us not to curse, even if the other person doesn't hear it, once a word is stated, once something comes out of your mouth, it actually bears weight. It has an effect, whether the person is aware or unaware. And he says, according to the Rechinach, he says, this we find the whole world feels that way. People don't want to be cursed. And when people are aware that somebody is cursing them, they actually have a certain fear in them. You know, like there's like a, you're not comfortable with that. And why is that? He says, because the truth is, it does have an effect. Now, of course, we have this concept that no person can do you harm unless Hashem intends. Obviously, that's all true. And yet, we still have to be careful. We don't want to bring any form of negativity into this world. Who wants to be the agent to bring that and to reveal that? Because there are different explanations. Obviously, if the person doesn't deserve the bad, they won't get the bad. But we can say, perhaps you bring it out in the open. You make it more accessible, whatever it may be. You don't want to have any part in it. So therefore, according to the Sefer HaChinuch, obviously, we don't curse whether the person hears it or doesn't hear it. It is such a heavy and negative thing. So very fascinating, his slant on it. And he actually has a very interesting way of saying, he says he knows what the Rambam says, and he understands that the Rambam's talking about making us better people, but he says, but he still thinks his view is like, not better, it's not better, but it's more, this is the more weighty reason, he says, for this mitzvah, that you don't want to cause harm to somebody else. Because it's quite fascinating. But obviously, both have validity, causing harm for yourself and causing harm to others. And that's why this is a very important mitzvah. Yes, Riva.
Yeah. And if they're more, you can just harm yourself more than the other.
100%. There's a lot of effects that it has, but that's also that's right. It's a terrible, it's a very, very powerful, scary kind of a thing in a way. But we don't think of it that way because we are just, it's just the way of the world. You know, a lot of times we're taught, especially nowadays, if you feel something, just let it out, you know, and then you'll move on. It doesn't work that way. Torah says, reframe your mind. Don't always have to let it out, and you don't have to, it doesn't mean suppressing. No, we're not talking suppressing, but you have to work on it in yourself to deal with it in a way where you can address the thing that's hurting you, and then it can settle down that way, not to feed it. Yes, that's right. You do, you eat yourself up, you're 100% right. And that's how you self-destroy. Rona, you're 100% right. It's quite a power. There's one more thing I wanted to do today, but I just want to share one thing, I hope you don't mind. Just a story. It sounds like a fairy tale story, but it's a story written by the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe in his memoirs. He has a beautiful book of memoirs. And he goes through the history of the times, of the early times of the Chassidim. And in the stories, I'll just share a drop of the story. There's a fascinating, fascinating story, which is, like we say, it would be like a fairy tale. And it's a story of his name was Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem. There was a few Baal Shem, as people are not aware, before Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem, leading up. So that was when real, Chassidus became spread. But there was somebody called Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem. He lived in a place called Zambach. And this story takes place actually in a city called Posen, a famous Jewish city, sort of in Prussia, Germany, Poland, whatever you want to call, where there was a couple, and it actually gives their names, whatever, the Gittel, what was her name, and then the husband's name, I forgot what his name was. Let me just see. It says what was the name of the husband, Avigdor Tuvia. They were very nice, kind people, he describes, helped many people. They owned an apartment, okay, now we would call it an apartment block, but whatever, they owned a few houses, and they rented it out. And that's how they had, that's how they lived. They didn't have children, or they did have children that died in their youth, so they didn't leave anybody to inherit. When they died, their apartment that they had lived in was vacant. And all of a sudden, the neighbors, where they were all Jewish tenants that were living around, heard these terrible, terrible noises coming out of the house. And it got worse and worse and worse, shrieking, and especially at night, crazy shrieking, loud noises, banging, glass breaking, terrible things happening, to the point that it escalated and escalated, that the people became very, very afraid, and slowly but surely all the tenants moved out of the houses around. because they couldn't cope with the noise. There was one person, his name, actually interesting, Baruch Batel, and he was one of the, he was like a great-great-grandfather of the first Chabad Rebbe. He was he had a connection to one of, to this Rebbe Yoel Baal Shem, and one time when he was traveling to his Rebbe, he had previously been a tenant and lived in one of these little houses, and he had now had to move and made his own house. And he shared with his Rebbe what was going on. And everybody wanted to know, what is this? What are these crazy sounds? And what are these crazy beings that are there? And Rebbe Yoel quizzed him, it says, and he asked him, tell me about that couple that lived in that house before. And he described that they were kind people, good people, helped people, but... So it describes it. They were obviously not very refined people. So the husband, he drank a lot and he played cards. That's not so terrible. But obviously when he drank, his mouth was quite foul. And the woman, he says, was even worse. She was actually extremely kind, where she wouldn't just give money, but she actually physically would, she was like a volunteer, you would say, on all the different services, the Bikur Chaylim, the whatever you want to call it now, helping mothers who had babies, she was there. But she had a mouth that everybody was petrified of. She opened her mouth, she would curse people, literally, and people literally, I mean, sometimes they were afraid of getting her help. So Rabbi Yael says, those curses that she uttered created these shadim, which we don't have nowadays, but somehow these demons are taking over the house. And the only way that we are going to be able, with even all the good that they did, it's not enough, because the negativity that they bred literally through the curses that came out of their mouth is like haunting the house. And he gave a whole, the story goes in detail, a whole procedure how they had to make the house into a shul, bring a Sefer Torah into the house, bring holiness, and it describes how finally it took a while till they were able to get rid of all these things. And they actually, the Baal Shem himself had to come, and he had to tell them, brought them to Din Torah and tell them, you have to leave. And it describes how when they left, you heard literally the windows shattered. It was like you didn't see them. They were obviously negative spiritual presences. But when they left, they shattered the windows. And after that, it was silent. No more. But what was the idea? Obviously, the idea of the story that he was bringing out was, we don't realize what we actually create when we say these terrible words, which we might not even mean, and we might not mean anything bad, and yet it actually creates spiritual negativity forces in the world. So this is just a small little part of this mitzvah.